the end of the day, when we've got so much money at stake, you know, make sure you get out there periodically anyways and keep people on their toes. And it's amazing how much better job they do if they at least see your face. You don't even need to know what you're looking at.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. We have Dan McCabe with the Minnesota Real Estate Club and also the new podcast, The Residual Bulldog. Dan, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing, Todd?
I am fantastic. Thanks for being on the show. And why don't you tell our guests a little bit more kind of about your background, you know, and how you got into real estate and how you became the founder of the Minnesota Real Estate Club. And then just kind of a synopsis or a little background of what you're doing now.
Sure. Yeah, it depends how far back you want to go. So this last week, as of recording this, I guess I turned 40 years old. So bought my first house at 19 years old. So 21 years. And
cool.
I got started in this as a long time ago. Grew up in Minneapolis, and, you know, not to go so far back, but
Not back to when you were in diapers.
Well, right. Yeah, not quite. I mean, yeah, looking at real estate in diapers. I've had each one of my kids sitting in a car seat on a closing table, though. So when they do this podcast 25 years from now, they can say back when I was a baby. But yeah, in high school, I wanted to be an architect or a stockbroker. And somewhere the marriage of those two things was real estate investor. I took tons of architecture classes, stock market classes, went to college at the University of St. Thomas. Serendipitously, at the same time, St. Thomas came out with a Bachelor of Science in Real Estate. So it was a finance degree with an emphasis on real estate. And I happened to jump into that because I didn't know what else I wanted to do there. And so, I don't know, I always joke when we're at our events and things like that. I got my BS in real estate. So I got that going for me. But I started buying houses right away in college. My freshman year of college, I had met a buddy who was living in another friend's house, and his friend's parents had helped him buy the house. And this was kind of my epiphany moment once upon a time. But my friend's friend's parents helped him buy the house, and they were all leasing from him. And so they each were renting a bedroom. And then he had the master bedroom. He had the master bath. He was not paying any rent because all these other pools were covering it. He had the only space in the one-car garage. And I got home from visiting that friend. It was over New Year's Eve, 1996 to 97, my senior year of high school. And like, I started to talk my parents into helping me buy a house, which they ultimately ended up doing. I did the exact same thing, charged three friends $250 a piece, and they covered the entire mortgage. And I had the master bedroom, the master bathroom, and the one space in the one car garage. So that was the beginning. I graduated college in the early 2000s. Anybody who was doing real estate back then, real estate was going up like crazy. And I always wanted to be an investor. That was kind of the goal. But back then, it even scared me as a punk 23-year-old kid to invest too much when housing prices were going up 13 to 15% annually, year after year. And I was no economic standout student by any means. But when I'm looking at income levels going up 3% a year, eventually, you know, that's not going to work out. Eventually, that's going to end badly. And we all saw what happened. So I worked as a real estate agent for years, eventually opened my own brokerage and didn't go full-time investing until 2008. And everybody thought I was crazy because the news said that real estate was such a bad idea in 2008, and all these people lost their shorts. But for all of us real estate investors out there, I mean, that was the golden era of my investing real estate investing career.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not a worse time to start, right?
Right.
In hindsight.
Exactly. So yeah, we went through that 2008, 2012, just real quick. We flipped a couple hundred houses. 2012, we made the switch over to new construction because that's where more money was. I mean, 2008 to 2012, it took about 4 years for the retail market to realize that all those foreclosures happened and it brought all the prices down. So they started realizing they could buy foreclosures and our margins were just getting thinner, but the new construction market picked up and that was really good for several years. And so that's how we started anyways.
Okay. So, and you're still doing some new construction right now?
We've got a lot of projects that we're wrapping up that we've had, and you know, I know a lot of your listeners are real estate investors here in the Twin Cities. I'm having a harder time finding stuff personally that I like for building spec new construction right now. But that's, you know, there are people that can do it. I'm watching people do it. Left, right, and sideways, who are builder investors that are still doing a decent job, but really prices have gone up. Lot prices are up and materials are up and labor's up. So that's kind of hurting that end of the market. We've got a bunch of lots that we still own free and clear down south, in Faribault, Minnesota. So we're going to go build down there just because it's safe and easy, but also at the same time, you know, kind of the way I explained the transition from being a broker to getting into doing a lot of flips and doing a couple hundred flips over a period of time, then we switched over to new construction. One thing anybody who's been investing for a while understands is you got to be somewhat nimble. You got to be able to move around with the tide a little bit and just go where it makes sense.
Yeah. So with this new construction that you got going on right now, you know, you're paying attention to the market, I'm assuming. What are you seeing in the market? Are you still optimistic that we're going to continue and the new construction can continue? Or are you kind of holding back, or where are you at? Because as a young punk, mm-hmm. you were able to kind of view that market then and say, well, this can't just keep going forever, which everybody knows markets can't keep going forever, but you also, right. you know, understand kind of where we are in the cycle. What do you think?
Where we're in the cycle, where we're at with new construction, as markets get good, as the economy gets good and everybody's making money the way it's been the last few years, everybody wants a little bit bigger piece of the pie. So, you know, I don't want to say people start getting greedier, but they start getting greedier. Since the last negative cycle that we went through, we lost a lot of the trades that were out there, meaning we lost a lot of labor, and anybody who's doing a lot of deals understands that there's a short supply of labor. So now the labor that is out there has become more expensive. In addition, things are really good right now, but at the same time, material costs have gone up. Since we started doing this in 2012, most of our material costs have gone up over 30%, which just isn't sustainable. For a small company like ours. I mean, we're not a regional builder. We're not Lennar. We're not D.R. Horton or anything like that. We build 10 to 20 houses a year. We're just not big enough to really get our material costs significantly down. Then at the same time, lots that I was buying in 2012 for $50,000 max, $80,000 are selling for $120,000. So, you know, I don't, you know, as a punk 40-year-old, I don't see how everything can go up and we can still keep making money within new construction. Building just building the spec houses, prices have gone up, and that part's true. And that part, you know, saved a lot of people's butts, I think, here over the last year. The houses we were, you know, hoping to get 400 for are now going for 500. But at the same time, with all those different things going up, just like what happened in 2005, for the people that are aggressively, you know, trying to make deals work right now and force deals through, eventually somebody's going to get caught holding the bag. And I don't, back then I didn't want to get caught holding the bag, and I don't want to get caught this time. So we're taking a little more conservative approach moving forward.
Well, explain, because that's, I think that's really important for anybody that's listening. Explain, how do you take a conservative approach? How do you not get caught holding the bag? What are you doing?
Well, with new construction, there's kind of only one price point. There's only one exit strategy, and that's sell. Yeah. So if you, there's an article in the newspaper, the local paper here last week, that was talking about these lots over in North Minneapolis, you know, the less nice part of Minneapolis. And they literally can't give these lots away because
still.
Right. Well, they can't give them away because it can cost you $250,000, $270,000 to build a house there that's worth $180,000. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense. Now, at the same time, over in South Minneapolis or somewhere else, you're going to be buying that same lot for $100,000 to $120,000 these days, maybe even more. And then you're building for $270,000 to $350,000. At that point, you've got a big loan, you got a big mortgage, and you need to be able to get rid of that thing. And if you can't sell it, if you get stuck holding the bag on that, one, you got a big note that you're covering. Two, you can't really rent it. You can, but do you really want to rent out your brand new $600,000 house that you just built? So, you know, then you got to deal with those issues.
Cash flow even.
Right. You're not going to cash flow it. The bank is not going to like that plan at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're going to be stuck in a pretty tough spot. So that's where I say a more conservative approach. A more conservative approach to me is getting lower in price point and having multiple exit strategies. If I need to rent something out, even if it's not making a pile of cash right up front, if I know it's a hit I can absorb for a period of time to go through a negative market, then, you know, and I can justify it being a long-term play, because we all know, like, the market will go down at some point, or we will hit a negative cycle again at some point. But then again, we're going to hit another boom market within our investing careers. Hopefully we all live to be that long. You know, I imagine we will, though. It's typical market cycles are, 7 to 15 years. So,
So
we should have time to, you know, recoup on the next time around. But I just want multiple exit strategies. I mean, I guess that's what I say by being more conservative.
Sure. Well, that's good. I'd say also not biting off more than you can chew. Is that right, too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, we've all been there for sure.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I guess I go back and forth on that one. I've certainly been there when we were building a lot of houses. We bit off a lot at a certain point, but, you know, the deals make sense and they're sitting in front of you. And if this is your full-time gig, you definitely got to try and figure things out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am 100% for, and plenty of people that know me can attest to it. I pretty much jump in the water until it's right up above my eye level, and then I'll definitely get in their ways, and then we swim back out and we end up higher than we were before. So it's I'm the wrong guy to ask about biting up.
That's good. So let's talk a little bit about this Minnesota Real Estate Club, MINREC. Why'd you start it, and what do you guys do there?
It was just kind of an interesting time back in 2011. February 2011 was when we launched. And I'd just come up, I'd been doing some speaking nationally for some different entrepreneurship groups and real estate groups. And one of the big name gurus had been coming through town who I happen to know personally, and they asked me to come speak on their stage a few times. And I did that. And I kind of kicked it off because I did that as a favor to them in exchange for them promoting an event for me, and which they ended up doing. And it got me a pretty large room of local investors right out of the chute. And the event I ran at the time, this was a real estate investing company, teaching people how to invest in real estate. And so I obviously couldn't compete with them. So I ended up teaching a class, teaching real estate agents how to work with investors. Because at the time, you know, real estate agents were struggling and one good investor could be worth 5, 10, 20 transactions a year. Why are you doing all your marketing for a client that might do a transaction once every 7 years? And the class went pretty well, but really, you know, I ran that initial like 3-hour event that ran into a 3-day event. We sold plenty of tickets to the 3-day event. While I was at, no, it was a 2-day event. While I was in the 2-day event, after the first day, even though these were all real estate agents that wanted to learn how to work with investors, it became painfully apparent that all they really wanted to do was learn how to invest. And so we ended up calling an audible. Day two, we just went through investing strategies. And then as we get through day two, everybody wanted to figure out how they could stay connected. And that was the next, phase. The real estate club was essentially born from that small group of people, which, you know, then I blasted out an email to a lot of my friends that I'd made around the Twin Cities here over the last 10 previous years of working in the Twin Cities. I think we had 35 people at the first meeting, 33 of them signed up for a membership, and we just kind of kept going from there. It's been a ton of evolutions for the real estate club over the last 7 years, but it's been a blast.
Yeah.
So highly recommend going. You should all go. So
what kind of things you guys talk about? What's the format?
I had mentors in my life who were really trying to get me to call this like another Minnesota Real Estate Association of some sort. They wanted the word association and they're so bad. Like, people want to be a part of an association. People want to feel like they belong to something. And I took a totally different mentality. And despite these really smart people telling me that I needed to be an association, I kept the word club in there. And I wanted to model it after a country club, like a golf country club. I wanted this to be a place where people that were seasoned, people that were actually doing deals, were showing up on a regular basis. And I never wanted it to be Dan McCabe, the face of the Minnesota Real Estate Club. I wanted it to be a club. I wanted it to be a place where people came together and deals got done. We brought all the different components of a real estate deal together. I didn't want the real estate agents to feel excluded, the mortgage brokers, because we need all these people to do deals. I wanted contractors to be there, title companies. I wanted all the different parts of a real estate deal to be in that room at the same time. And at the same time, we charged at a higher price point than any of the other local real estate groups, which we took a little bit of flack for, but at the same time, it helped us maintain a higher level of member. Which one of the things I was always really proud of is we always maintain a pretty high level of retention within our people, even though we were more than double the cost of the next, you know, nearest competitor, so to speak. And we were never the biggest in size, but I would venture that we were up there with getting the most deals done of any kind of group that was in town, which is what I felt was more important. And we were really a lot more about how do you build your business, as opposed to going over the ABCs of how do you do a real estate deal. Frankly, that stuff's all over the place. There's tons of courses out there for that right now. You can go to YouTube and find stuff if you really want to. So we were more about how do you build your business, grow your business. And through some of the different evolutions, we tried different price points. We lowered the price point for a period of time. And frankly, it didn't really help membership at all. It really just gave us different people. But at the same time, this past year, I re-raised the membership back up to the original price point, and we're growing better than we were last year. So I don't know. But yeah, it's designed to be a club. It's designed to be a place where people come together. They can talk about, pitch their deals. We have different speakers every single month, which come in on whatever their topics are. This last month, I know, was how do you get all your deals funded. We had a couple hard money lenders there. We had the president of a bank there. And then a few people that have done some really creative deals talked about how they got those structured, so people that were less experienced could learn about that. In a calendar year, we have 12 months. So that's effectively 12 meetings. 10 of our meetings will be in a classroom style setting. But I have a heavy focus on relationship building, so I get rid of the word networking, or I try to anyway. So when people show up to our meetings, they got some time beforehand that they can network, but then we always do a networking reception afterwards, and I've seen people stay at those receptions. We end our meetings around 8:30 or so, and I've seen people stay till 11 o'clock or later just hanging out. And that's kind of what it's designed for. It's designed to actually build those relationships. So on top of those, we also do two big social events a year for all of our members, and also to bring other people in so our members can meet more people. And that's a boat cruise that we've done every July for 7 years. And then in December, we do a big holiday party. So we do a lot of things for people to build relationships. You don't do deals with people that you go to a networking event, exchange a business card with, and never talk to again. You do deals with the people you hang out with for a few hours, have a beer, and enjoy some time with, and actually build a real relationship.
Yeah. I had a guy on here that talked about the ninja business cards. You just throw your business card to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't work. You know, you gotta actually get to know them.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of just dovetailing off that just for a second, I have an interesting story. When the first year of the Minnesota Real Estate Club, I was at a internet marketing event in Texas, and I see Ron LeGrand sitting over in the corner. And I don't know, for people that don't know who Ron LeGrand is, he's like the godfather of real estate seminars. And I was like, how do I get Ron LeGrand to come speak at the Minnesota Real Estate Club event? So kind of went up to him like a shy little high school boy going to talk to a girl, and just started talking. I don't even know what I was talking about, but introduced myself. And he gave me his business card, and I said I could, I was telling him everything about the real estate club and what we could do for him. And he'd give me his card like right on early. And then he asked me, he's like, well, give me your card and I will give it to my assistant. We'll reach out to you and we'll find a time to get there. I didn't know if he was telling me the truth or if he was BSing me. And I was like, oh, you know, Ron, sorry, I don't carry business cards anymore. And which I don't. And I'll tell you why in just a second here. And he just looked at me and he kind of like winked and like waved his finger. And I handed back the business card that he'd given me. He flipped it over, wrote over his real email, his real phone number, and handed it back. So I was like, well, nice, I guess. So I've never carried business cards since, because I always figured that if I'm actually going to do a deal with somebody, we're going to figure out each other's information without the business card, one way or the other. I don't know. It's worked out fine so far.
Yeah, it's actually funny. I do have business cards. I do carry them sometimes, but I was just at a big networking event and I brought like six business cards with me, and it was a couple day event, conference, real estate conference. So I gave my business cards away, you know, the first couple hours people are asking. Yeah. Then after that, I didn't have any left. It wasn't really a big deal because,
no,
like you said, if you're going to meet somebody that you actually want to connect with, you're going to figure out how to connect with them.
So, absolutely. And and with the advent of cell phones and everything else.
We all got these little cell phones that
right,
figure out how to put somebody's number in there.
I was at another event, a couple weeks ago here in Boise, and it's everything was just, you know, if you talk to somebody and you like them, we looked each other up on Facebook. Everybody's just looking each other up. Are you on Facebook? You're on Facebook. And, you know, you don't have to friend them just because you meet them there. You just set them up in your messenger. And it was, that's pretty much what everybody there did. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Well, cool. Let's shift in some business stuff, since that's what you guys do at MinRec. Let's talk about, you know, what's advice through what you've learned and your experiences, and how to operate your business successfully?
I guess some of the things that I have learned over the years, and I guess we always think about the stuff that we could have done better, right? So a lot of us entrepreneurs, we get so caught up in this big picture of everything, and I've got big ideas, grand ideas, and I just want to go do it. And, you know, I'm the type of person, I'll jump off the cliff and then look up to see if it was a good idea sometimes. So one of the things that I have learned over the years is that stepping back and creating just proper organization and systems for everything will save you a pile of headaches down the road. So, you know, stepping back, making sure you understand how you're going to maintain your books, for one thing. I'm an entrepreneur. I freaking hate bookkeeping. Hate it with a passion. I don't know why. It is so hard for me to collect three receipts throughout the day and then enter them into a QuickBooks that night. I just can't do it. I physically am unable to sit at a computer and type those numbers in. So, you know, that's where we hire that kind of stuff out now. completely, but it's that kind of stuff. Just making sure you have those systems and processes in place are absolutely huge. Communication is a big one, and this has gone, you know, every which direction. I've been able to maintain a lot of relationships and deals, even if deals haven't turned out as well as we want them to, by making sure that we're always communicating. At the same time, I have grown immensely frustrated with people like contractors and things like that over the year over their poor communication. So don't be that guy. Make sure that you're always talking. People can deal with problems, but they want to know what they are. And then kind of going through, you know, the one other thing that was big for us over the years that I could say I've, you know, legitimately screwed up a couple times is just hiring the wrong people. So making sure that as you're building your business, you go through a proper hiring process. So whether that's, you know, some people try to do that through profile tests and things like that. I guess I kind of prefer now I just start people off slower and I put a lot more onus on them to prove themselves up front, you know, whether it's just with one project or something like that. And that's worked out pretty well. So,
yeah, that's a good idea. So let's piggyback because you kind of talked about some things you've learned. So what's one of the biggest mistakes you've kind of made throughout the years and how did you learn from it? How'd you grow from it?
I think that's one I kind of mentioned there is hiring the wrong people. Cause I've done it twice in my investing career now where, you know, we've gotten bigger and we've tried to scale and we're scaling faster than I probably should be. Which, you know, it's fine to grow and you want to go with markets and things like that. But, it's, I would say twice just growing too fast, hiring the wrong people, not doing my proper due diligence. And, you know, me being a human being, like a lot of people out there, I can be very trusting and, you know, I trust people. I trust that everybody has, you know, good intent and that they're going to be able to follow through on what they say they're going to do. And it's not always the case. So, you know, I learned what was a quote from one of the investors I was working with once upon a time, because she said it to me, was it like trust first, verify second. And I can't say I always did the verification process going through it. And especially when we were growing this last time around, the last time we tried to scale significantly, I had a partner and I was kind of just letting him hire his team. And I wasn't even thinking about it, but I had so much at stake throughout this entire process, whether it's my money, or my investors who had money who came into the deal and things like that. I just had a lot at stake and I was kind of letting him hire and pick his team apart. And I didn't vet him and I didn't really ask what he did to vet him. If he liked him, I was just like, you know, I trusted him. I'm like, just go for it, just do it. And in hindsight, if I'm going to own that company and people are going to be working and have access to all of our deals and to some extent our money and things like that as they're going through deals, I should have been a lot more diligent with that process and I should have vetted them. So, I mean, one of the guys was a felon, you know, I don't know. That's another crazy story. I won't get into that one too much, but involved a small amount of thievery from us and a fake illness diagnosis. And then he went on to rob a bank after he was gone from us.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah,
that's a whole nother episode. That's a whole nother podcast episode.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But yeah, that's the stuff where, you know, the stealing wasn't, you know, the amount of money wasn't that big a deal. That was all very survivable, but it was what it did to the projects in the meantime, because now you got to recoup all that money, get the projects back up and running, all that kind of stuff. There was more lost money due to projects being delayed and just opportunity costs that we lost throughout the process than the actual money it took. But man, yeah, had I known the background, I might've made different decisions. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really valuable. Cause it's so easy to get caught up in just trying to hire some people and get them going. Cause especially when you're growing fast, you know, I've done the same thing we're growing fast. We got so many projects going on. You're just watching them sit there. If you don't get people hired, especially with contractors, you know, and you hire the wrong people and but it's all avoidable or mostly avoidable. You know, you're bound to still make, you're human, you're bound to still make mistakes sometimes, but doing that due diligence and checking, you know, criminal history,
right?
Stuff yeah. like that is really yeah. important. And I don't know if it's you're the same. For me, it's hard for me to get rid of people too. So I take a little too long usually to get rid of them.
I've certainly done that a number of times in my life. I think I've finally started turning the corner here recently in the last couple of years, where I've become a little more jaded and I can cut ties pretty quickly. It's kind of like bad tenants. We used to have a huge rental portfolio, and I got to a point where I didn't believe anything anybody said. It was, you know, I swear the same lady's mom died at least 3 times. So, you know, like when she's making up excuses on why rent is late and things like that. So I just became incredibly jaded over a period of time with tenants. They could be telling me, you know, they could be telling me good news. I probably didn't believe them. So yeah, I kind of got the same way with employees. And I guess kind of piggybacking on how you protect yourself from that is, you know, there's that quote out there, you got to inspect what you expect. And when I was growing significantly and when we were really scaling and building a lot of houses, I can't say I was doing that. I was running around trying to manage the business end of things. I mean, my whole role in that company was continue to find deals and make sure they get funded. So I was finding deals, finding money, and I was doing that. I wasn't going out and looking at the projects. I wasn't paying close enough attention to those. And that's kind of where we got burned. And we got, you know, I was burned on that is, you know, little as about a year and a half ago, year and a half ago, where I was, you know, had project managers who were looking at the projects. At the end of the day, when we've got so much money at stake, you know, make sure you get out there periodically anyways and keep people on their toes. And it's amazing how much better job they do if they at least see your face. You don't even need to know what you're looking at. But if you just show up and walk around and they see your face, they know you're going to stop by. Like, you know, I got into a habit when we were, as we were cleaning up some of those projects after the old project manager, the felon and all that stuff, after we were cleaning some of those up, is I would drive to some of the projects, the closest ones to my house. I would hit on the way there and the way back, because if they saw me twice a day, things were definitely getting done. If they knew they could expect that periodically, I never stopped by long, maybe 5 minutes. I was always in a hurry. We've got, you know, we're all busy. We got stuff going on, but yeah, I would definitely, you know, make sure that you're getting there and you got some quality control. If you're paying people to do stuff, you got to make sure that they're doing what they said they're going to do, and you got to make sure it meets expectations.
Yep. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Just showing your face periodically, like you said, is super important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. So how does somebody take it to the next level? Somebody that's just started, or somebody that's maybe doing okay, but wants to get to that next level. How do they take it to the next level?
Well, I guess I'm a big believer, and one of the things I'm working on, I've got, you know, and we won't go into them here, but I've got a couple businesses outside of real estate, but the concept is the same. And as I was growing my real estate business, and as I'm growing these other businesses now, one of the things that I encourage everybody to do is to just do what you're good at and do what you're passionate and excited about. Don't try to do everything. You go through these big seminars and they try to teach you to go out there and here's how you market. Here's how you talk to the sellers. And then here's how you rehab the property. You hire the contractors and you sell the property, and they expect you to do all this stuff. But reality is you can't do all that stuff. So you're not that smart. So no offense, listener, you're not that smart. But really, none of us are that smart to take everything and be the best at every single step along the process. So you want to go out and you want to find people who are experts at what they do. Hire experts to do what experts do. And just do the part that you're good at and whatever the highest and best use of your actual time is. So I had a mastermind. I still host a twice a year mastermind. And it was about a month and a half ago. And a good friend of mine, Jake Kinder, who runs a huge real estate agent coaching business, one of the largest in the country, very successful. But he came and spoke at our meeting for us. And he just did like a keynote presentation. And when we were talking afterwards, he said one thing to me that as I was kind of building one of these other businesses, he said, because he's familiar with that arena as well. And he said, just find A players and let them do their thing. Don't hire B players. Don't hire C players. Just hire A players and let them do their thing. And as long as you hire people that are experts in what they do, you're going to be 10 times better off than hiring, I don't know, one of the mistakes I've made throughout the years, especially with contractors and project managers, is hiring the person that I think I can mold. And I just, you know, over the years, it's burned me way more than it has helped me. And ultimately, I would have saved and made a lot more money if I just would have hired, you know, the people that were already experts kind of in those arenas. So one of the big fallacies I see out there, especially for the real estate community, is there's so many people that go through the seminars and they learn marketing and rehabbing, and they think they can do both of them. They're going to go out and market for deals, and then they're going to rehab those projects. But how many stories have you heard of people that did market and then they did stumble into a deal, and then they spent so much time rehabbing that property, they never filled their pipeline with new deals. Yeah. And so they get through that project and they got nothing, and they're sitting there with their hands in the air like, well, what do I do now? At the same time, I'm a firm believer that nobody really is an expert in both of those two arenas. Marketing for deals is a full-time job. Rehabbing properties, being a developer or a redeveloper or flipper, whatever you want to call it, that's a full-time job. You know, get good at one of those two skills and pay the other side to do their piece. So it's, you don't need to have 100% of every deal that you're doing. I would much rather take a lesser percentage of each deal and make sure I've got, you know, the experts all the way around doing their thing, and that deal has a higher chance of success. And then I can have more of those deals going as well, because I'm not scrambling. If I'm trying to do all my own marketing, all my own rehabbing, my development, everything, I'm spread too thin. I'm going to fail at everything. So
that's that's great advice. I like that last part of spread too thin. I'm going to fail at everything. Cause that's what so many people do. They try to, they just try to do everything, like you said, and they just fail. Ultimately, yeah. They fail, and they can't, a lot of people can't figure out why they failed, because they were doing everything that, you know, that guru or whoever they listened to told them to. But somehow they failed and they can't figure it out. And you just nailed it right there. That's why you're failing.
Yeah. The three-ring binder. It's got a lot of good information in it, but yeah, you can't do it all. Can't do it all yourself. That's for sure. So don't try. I want to try to, especially if I was starting out, if I'm trying to get to that next level. Really, if I want to get to the next level, you know, it's, you hire experts in everything. So yeah, it's, and that's kind of what I'm doing in this other business model, because I don't know everything about it. I can't take all my real estate knowledge and apply it to this other industry. At the same time, I guess, you know, to talk about in real estate, when I first got into new construction, I went out and I found investors who were like me, people like me who'd flipped a lot of houses, who had gotten into the new construction space to some extent. And I just hired them and I said, you guys do this. I'm just going to sit back and watch. And I let them do it. I cut them in for like 10% of the deal or 15% of the deal. I can't remember. They didn't have any money into it. It was no skin off their back, and they were making, you know, an extra $8,000 to $12,000. So they were fine doing it. And I just watched them do it. We put up the money and they hired the crews and did all the stuff. And I was like, all right, that works. So yeah, hire experts, do what experts do.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your goals moving forward?
You know, right now it's, I guess I told you how I felt about new construction right now. I am all for buying, you know, some rehab type properties if they make sense and we can have multiple exit strategies, but I'm not seeing a lot of that right now. One of the things that I'm looking for that I find interesting in our current marketplace anyways are properties that I believe are undervalued that contain a lot of land. Like, I'm interested in land within the metro area. I'm interested in, you know, that rare 5-acre parcel in Apple Valley that, you know, pops up, that's there and is underpriced, got an old crappy house on it or whatever. Because I believe that's one thing we're always, if you look at Minneapolis right now, there's definitely a shortage of land, and they're coming up with all kinds of code changes allowing more density and things like that on a regular basis. I think that's only going to continue going into the future. So I'm interested in that. You know, me and another business partner, we're in the midst of, you know, launching a hard money company, but I can't say we're in any big hurry doing that necessarily. So, and then beyond that, you know, we just want to stockpile resources. As far as our real estate investing goes in the future, we want to stockpile resources for whenever the next downturn is, because I was through the last downturn, and there's so much opportunity when you hit a downturn. It's going to happen again. So we're going to make sure that we're prepared to strike when that starts making sense again. So beyond that, I want to hang out with my family more. I want to, I'm coaching my kids' baseball team. We're taking a road trip here at the end of the summer for a few weeks. And as long as I got a cell phone, I'll be fine. I mentioned to you earlier, we're launching a podcast, doing some other stuff, and I'm just kind of enjoying everything I'm doing right now.
Awesome. What's the name of that podcast again?
That's the Residual Bulldog Podcast. So, and it's all about building your residual income, and it's really taking it back to the basics for a lot of people, and just, sure, you know, it's really just discussing different ideas throughout all kinds of entrepreneurship. You know, real estate's always been my backbone, but I love all forms of entrepreneurship. I'm just, you know, I'm a little bit of an entrepreneur junkie. And I also believe that people ultimately, they get into real estate investing because it's one of the easiest entrepreneurial ventures to get into. There's not a lot of people that get into our industry for the actual love of real estate. And they might say that they love the idea of going and picking out tiles, and they want to pick all the colors, and they think it's fun to go through houses. And I believe that for a short window of time, but eventually houses will become boxes. And it's not so much that people want to flip houses. They want the result of flipping that house. They want the big paycheck at the end of it. Flipping the house is actually a pain in the butt. So, you know, it sounds like it's, you know, fun and glamorous, and TV makes it look really cool. But at the end of the day, flipping and redeveloping properties is a series of small fights that you're trying to come out on top of, whether it's with contractors or lenders, right? I mean, you're always negotiating, you're always debating, you're showing up at projects at 9 a.m. to realize nobody's shown up yet, and you're arguing with people. And yes, at the end of the day, you get a bigger paycheck, which is really cool. But I believe that's what people really want. So that's where the Residual Bulldog Podcast comes in, is just, you know, helping give people different ideas on how do you get to that result, because that's what we all care about. That's why we get into entrepreneurship in the first place. We don't get into it because we want something that requires us to be there 40 hours a week. We don't necessarily want a job. We want to get to a point where we have time freedom. So that's what that's about. And, you know, I've met a lot of cool entrepreneurs along my journey, and it's just kind of, it's fun. It's kind of like what we're doing here. It's just fun to talk to like-minded people that are doing cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Well, good luck on that. I'm sure it'll go well. You already have a good audience with your real estate club and all the, you know, deals you've done through the years. So last couple questions. What's a favorite book of yours, or maybe something you're reading right now that you really enjoy?
Well, given the podcast and everything, I have a little bit of a internet marketing addiction. So I would say one book I'm reading right now that I really enjoy, which actually, even if you don't like internet marketing, it applies to, really can apply to any industry. It's called Digital President. And it's by a friend of mine named Michael Reese. And so I mentioned Jay earlier, who spoke at my mastermind. Jay and Michael are business partners within their organization. And he put together this book, and it's really good. And it's all about providing and exceeding the customer's expectations, and how do you continuously add value to your customer, your client. How do you exceed everything? How do you make the client experience so memorable that you start building this raving fan base, which will help you in your real estate business. It'll help you in an online business. It'll help you with a home base. It'll help you kind of across the board, whichever direction you decide to go. You know, if you can create raving fans out of people who are investing your deals, is that a good thing? Yeah. So absolutely. So actually, I really like that book right now, and that's the one I'm reading right now. Just about all the way through it, and yeah, highly recommend it. Otherwise, you know, kind of just taking it old school for the new people that are getting started. The E-Myth certainly changed my life once upon a time. Just helping, and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, having experts do what experts do. It kind of really teaches you how to figure out all the different facets of your business, and then how do you start plugging people into the areas where it doesn't make the most sense for you to be in. So that's a good one. And then, you know, as you graduate from that and you want to advance a little more traction by Gene Wickman's really good. So
yeah,
those were kind of, those were my entrepreneurial Bibles for a long time. But yeah, then Digital Presence, the one I'm reading now, which I highly recommend it for anybody. I mean, you don't have to be an internet marketer to get a lot out of that book.
Cool. Appreciate that. Last question before we wrap up, what's your definition to obtaining financial freedom or to financial freedom?
You know, we talk about this a lot these days, especially with the Residual Bulldog podcast, is, you know, where is that? And ultimately, you know, we talk about time freedom. And, you know, if you look at Rich Dad, Poor Dad's definition of, as soon as your residual income exceeds your residual bills, you know, is that financial freedom? Because then you get those choices to go out there and do whatever it is that you want. So that's one of the things I look at. I guess for me, it's, I really want that freedom to do what I want, when I want, with who I want. And I've got three little kids now. I made commitments to them. That's part of the reason I'm coaching baseball this season and doing things like that, is just making sure I've got time to spend with them. If I want to hop in the truck and take the camper and go out for 3 weeks later this summer, I want to be able to do that. So yeah, the ultimate definition, I don't know if it has a financial, there's no financial point necessarily. It's, we all want to be successful, but I want to be able to do what I want, you know, when I want, with who I want. So that's my ultimate goal.
Awesome. Appreciate that. So last thing is, how do our listeners get in contact with you and find out more about what you're doing if they want to reach you or reach your podcast and your real estate club?
Yeah, I guess you can use Dan at either one of those things. So dan@mnrealestateclub.com. If you're local to Minnesota and you want to learn more about that in real estate, certainly go there. And then dan@residualbulldog.com works as well. Okay. For your national audience, we have a lot of training programs where putting on there as well, and we have a lot of conversations similar to this. And one of the things that I found over the years is I just like to bring people back to some of the basics. So that's what we try to do there. We try to take that person who's struggling, who's got the 9-to-5 job, who's been trying to figure out how to get out of that. They're just starting to realize there has to be something more out there, and you know, where can they properly get started? Because I think a lot of the big courses that are out there these days are taking people from the middle somewhere. Like, you got to do A through Z to get to the finish line, but they're starting on like at M for whatever reason. It's, you know, there's so many basics that need to be learned before you jump into a real estate business. So yeah, that's how we get a hold of us. And we're around Residual Bulldog Podcast. You can look it up, and we're all over Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else. So
cool. Awesome. Well, Dan, I appreciate you being on the show and taking time out of your day. And I enjoyed this conversation because you talk more about, you know, building the business versus the ABCs of real estate. And like you said, you can go onto YouTube and find that. You can go on. There's so many sources for that, but people forget about actually building that business. And so I've enjoyed this conversation because you preach the same thing.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, one thing, you know, one of the things I learned in this is that the people that succeed in this business are the people that become somewhat obsessed with this business. Mm-hmm. And if you want the knowledge is going to be out there. It's going to be all over YouTube. It's going to be all over podcast. It's going to be all over SoundCloud, wherever you want to go get it. You're going to become obsessed with it, and you're going to consume so much content. Eventually, you're going to form, you know, your own business model. That's what a lot of us did. You know, back in the day, I went to a pile of seminars, formed my own model. So yeah, the content's there. You just got to go seek it. And if you want to succeed at it, you know, you got to be a little obsessed.
Yeah. Love it. Well, great. Appreciate you being on the show, and you have a fantastic rest of the day.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, Dan McCabe. Appreciate him joining us on the show and the value he's been able to add. You're not that smart. That's the best line that I've heard in a while. You're not that smart when Dan talks about, you know, basically you're trying to do everything. You're just not that smart. So a couple of things I've took from Dan, what he said in the show is, first of all, step back, take that step back and figure out, you know, how do you create the systems and the organization that's going to be successful. You know, getting you to success, and you know, make sure that you're doing what you're good at and passionate about. a lot of times we try to do things that we're not so good at. We always think we can do everything. So make sure you hire the right people to be able to take that off your plate. And then probably the last thing, and this is kind of goes along with a lot of this, is don't hire those you think you can mold. He talks about hiring people that are already there, that are going to be good. You don't have to worry about molding them to be who you want them to be. They should already have skills or the passion to be able to be successful. So reach out to Dan, residualbulldog.com, or Dan at MinnesotaRealEstateClub.com as well. And then, you know, if you're joining us for the first time, or maybe you've been listening to us for a while, we'd love to have you subscribe to the show on iTunes. Or wherever you listen. And we'd also love a rating and review on iTunes, and go on there, give us a five-star, hopefully five-star rating, and give us a review. If you've got any comments you want to make, if you want to give us feedback that can be constructive, or maybe you just want us to talk about certain things, go on to our Facebook page, Pillars of Wealth Facebook page, and you know, you can communicate easily with us there. You can also do it on YouTube, and you can reach out on our website as well, Pillars of Wealth Creation website as well. So give us some feedback. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know if you want us to talk about a certain topic or anything like that. We want to try to serve you best. So that is it. I am Todd Dexheimer. I'm signing out. Make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.